Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
When Maddie Mitchell was watching her great-grandchildren at their Wichita, Kansas home, she decided to lie down and go to sleep with them. After all, what could be safer than keeping the little ones close? But when Maddie woke up at around 3 a.m. on September 5th, 2001, her four-year-old great-granddaughter, Jaquila Scales, was gone. Maddie wasn't sure what had happened, just that Jaquila had disappeared while she and Jaquila's two-year-old brother, Marcus, peacefully slept. An intense search was launched, but Wichita police weren't able to find the little girl. If she had wandered off, surely she would have been found quickly. Instead, for over 20 years, Jaquila's family has been searching for answers and begging the world not to forget the boisterous little girl who vanished in the middle of the night. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Jaquila Scales. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. So this week's episode is going to be on the shorter side, simply because there isn't a lot of information out there on Jaquila and her disappearance.
That's sad, though.
Yeah, her story did garner local media attention at the time, but she disappeared just days before 9/11, so she was quickly overshadowed. In addition to that, in the early 2000s, missing Black kids from poor neighborhoods didn't garner the media attention that other missing persons cases did. But Jaquila was only 4 years old when she went missing. She had just started preschool, and her family still deserves answers. Jaquila deserves to be talked about. So let's just get right into the case of Jaquila Scales. Jaquila Yvonne Scales was born on March 2nd, 1997, to Eureka Scales. Now, Eureka was only 14 when her daughter was born.
Whoa, that is really young.
Yeah, and Jaquila's father wasn't involved in the girl's life. When Jaquila was born, Eureka was living with her grandmother, Maddie Mitchell. Now, she had already been living there for several years because Eureka's mother died of complications from sickle cell disease when Eureka was just 7 or 8 years old.
That's really sad.
Yeah. And Eureka's father also wasn't in the picture. So, so she just had been living with her great-grandmother. And because Eureka was so young when Jaquila was born, she asked her grandmother to take custody of the baby. Now, you know, I don't know, like, I'm sure there were legal reasons for this or, you know, something that made her want to do this because they did live together, you know. So it's not like Eureka asked her grandmother to take custody and took off or anything like that. Around 2 years after Jaquila was born, Eureka gave birth to another child, a son named Marcus. Now, Eureka would have been 16 or 17 by then, so I believe that she retained legal custody of Marcus. Eureka and her two children shared a room in the back of Maddie's house in Wichita, Kansas. And apparently two uncles also lived with them in the small ranch-style home. Jaquila was nicknamed Grammy Boo by her family because she was an old soul.
Grammy Boo?
Yeah.
That's adorable.
I know. They've said that she got the nickname because she was bossy and acted like an old lady. She was very talkative and loved to wear colorful barrettes in her hair. Apparently, Maddie her great grandmother, the kids called her Grammy. So like Jaquila would call her Grammy and they would call Jaquila Grammy Boo.
That's cute.
Yeah. Though her mother was gone and her father wasn't in her life, Eureka grew up surrounded by her family in her central northeast Wichita neighborhood. In addition to living with several relatives, her aunt lived next door. I also read an article that said Marcus's grandmother lived next door, but I'm not sure if that means his paternal grandmother or if it was her paternal grandmother. So if it was Marcus's great-grandmother, so if it was Marcus's father's mother or if it was Eureka's father's mother.
All very difficult to keep track of, but bottom line is there's a lot of family around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So either way, Eureka had a lot of support and her children were well-loved by many people. September 3rd, 2001 was Labor Day. That morning, Eureka got both of her kids up and dressed. Jaquila loved visiting Eureka's aunt's house and asked her mom if she could go over there that day. Eureka agreed, but told her aunt to have Jaquila back home that night because she was starting preschool the next day.
Exciting.
Yeah, so Tuesday, the day after Labor Day. Articles say that Marcus was spending the day with his grandmother, but again,
yeah,
I'm not exactly sure whose grandmother, but in any case, Eureka found herself without children for the day. So she decided to walk over to a nearby friend's house. Now, Eureka ended up staying over at the friend's house that night and the next night. Most accounts have this as just like a teenager who had help with her children spending the night somewhere else for a few days. However, one article I read that was published by the Associated Press via the Salina Journal in February 2002 says that there might have actually been some discontent in her home. Here's an excerpt from the article written by Roxana Hedgeman. Quote, now 19, Eureka argues a lot with Big Mama. By the way, side note, Big Mama is what everybody else called Maddie. So the kids apparently called her Grammy, but she was known by the rest of her family as Big Mama. She was the matriarch.
Gotcha.
So yes. So now 19, Eureka argues a lot with Big Mama over money, the children, and getting her life together, and has moved out, leaving behind her own children with the same woman who raised her, end quote. Now, this seems like an unkind characterization to me. You know, leaving behind her own children with the same woman who raised her, because it makes it seem as though Eureka wasn't involved in her children's lives.
Yeah.
Which, you know, she seemingly was. And whether Eureka was staying at her friend's house for a few days or had actually moved out, it might not be relevant to this case.
Right.
But frankly, there are so few clues that I think we need to get like anything out there that we possibly can. Most of the articles I've read on this case interview Eureka, and I really wish reporters would talk to other relatives, especially her aunt, who we'll talk more about later. Now, I did, again, and I'm not sure about names here, because I've seen an aunt get quoted in an article with the name Aletha, but then in a video I'm going to talk about later, it sounds like she says Lisa, but so I don't know if I'm just mishearing that or if it's a different aunt.
Okay.
So in any case, the AP reporter interviewed Maddie for this article that I was just talking about, the one in February 2002. So not only do we get a different perspective on the living arrangements, but we also get a detailed timeline of the evening leading up to Jaquila's disappearance. Because remember, Maddie was there, Eureka was not.
Right.
The house that the family shared is a small three-bedroom, one-level home. It's less than 1,000 square feet, so the back room is basically filled by a bed and a TV. On the evening of September 4th, Maddie put Jaquila and Marcus to bed together in the big bed in the room. At around 8 p.m., she took her medication, which she was on for arthritis and various other medical conditions. She then got into bed with both of the children and watched Cops.
Okay.
Which... I have spent many a night alone in hotel rooms because for whatever reason, for the longest time, anytime I'd be in a hotel room, like flipping through the channels, there would be a Cops marathon on.
Yeah.
So I can relate to this. According to Maddie, her medication makes her sleepy. So I'm not exactly sure if she kind of like took the pills at 8, you know, watched a little bit of Cops and dozed off,
mm-hmm.
Or if she managed to stay up for a while. But either way, she was awake at around 12:30 a.m. The small room had a window air conditioning unit, and little Jaquila was sleeping basically like right next to it. And she had, you know, because she's a four-year-old, she had, of course, like kicked off all of the blankets. So she was like shivering in her little floral nightgown. So Maddie, you know, covered her up and turned the air conditioner down. She then went to sleep, not knowing that it would be the last time she would see her great-granddaughter.
Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey, everyone. It's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
So you said she went to sleep. Did she go to sleep in the same bed as the kids?
Yes.
So she stayed there all night?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the bed, I'm not sure if it's a queen size or a king size, but basically the three of them were all kind of snuggled up in it. Maddie next woke up at 3 a.m. So remember how I said the bedroom was in the back of the house?
Yeah.
Well, it also had a back door, the bedroom.
The bedroom had a back door.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so when Maddie woke up at 3, the door was wide open and Jaquila was gone.
Shit. I mean, that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But Marcus was there.
Yeah. Like, from what it sounds like, Marcus just kind of slept through the whole thing, as did Maddie, until, I don't know if it was the door being open that woke her up or what, but it doesn't sound like she woke up because she, like, heard anything or felt anything, or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think she just kind of woke up like a lot of people do in the middle of the night, and then noticed the door was open, and then noticed that Jaquila was gone. Maddie called 911 at 4:06 a.m. Soon, dozens of officers were canvassing the neighborhood and interviewing neighbors. At around 4:30, Eureka and her friend were still up and watching TV. Now, remember, they're close by, like, because Eureka just walked over there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're watching TV and hanging out, and they keep on seeing police cars drive by.
Yeah.
So at one point, they went outside to kind of like see what was going on and, you know, stayed out for a few minutes or whatever, and then went back in. But shortly after they went back inside, there was a knock at the door. A Wichita police officer was standing there and asked Eureka if she had her daughter. Confused, she said no, that Jaquila was staying at her grandmother's. And that's when Eureka found out that her daughter was missing. The apartment that Eureka was staying in was a small one-bedroom, and police searched it thoroughly, looking under the bed and in closets to verify that she wasn't hiding her daughter for some reason. Eureka called her grandmother to find out what was going on, and Maddie told her, quote, "somebody grabbed her off the bed," end quote. Which, as a mother, can you imagine having somebody say that to you?
I can't imagine that as a father. Like,
yeah,
it's wild to hear that, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, we don't know if that's actually what happened. She said that, but, you know,
right.
It's just, that's crazy. It's crazy to hear that.
Just the amount of fear that just must have gone through her system at that moment. So when this investigation begins, police don't know if they're looking at an abduction or a case of a little girl who got out of bed and wandered off on her own. The back door's lock was broken.
Had it been broken before?
Yes.
Okay.
This was like a known thing, and it had been broken for I don't know how long, but it had already been broken. So it didn't lock, and it hadn't locked for some time. So there was no sign of forced entry or anything like that, but that didn't necessarily mean anything because
it still could have been her leaving from the inside.
Exactly. Jaquila could have easily opened the door herself. And likewise, somebody could have easily walked in, you know?
Right. But if somebody easily walked in, then chances are that somebody knew that that lock was broken. So it was somebody that was familiar with the house.
Right.
If there was somebody.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't think that it's incredibly likely that a random burglar or child abductor or whomever would just walk around and assume that a back door would be open.
Yeah, or know that the back door led to where the children were sleeping.
Right. And if it was a burglar, you know, you don't just go, oh, wait, no, I'm not going to go for the TV. I'm going to go for the kid instead.
Just go snatch this kid, right.
Yeah, usually it's one or the other.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they're dealing with, right? Like, either she walked off or somebody came in and grabbed her. But to Eureka, like, neither of these possibilities made any sense to her. Jaquila wasn't the type of child who would just wake up in the middle of the night and wander out into the pitch black. Also, Eureka's dog, a chow named Bebe, was tied up out back. And according to Eureka, that dog would bark at everyone, including her. And it was her dog. So she doesn't understand how either Jaquila could have gotten out silently or how an intruder could have gotten in without disturbing anyone. One question that I haven't seen answered is whether or not anyone else was home at the time of Jaquila's disappearance. So I mentioned that two uncles lived there as well. Mm-hmm. I've only read that in one article, and I've never seen either uncle mentioned anywhere ever. So I don't know if maybe they lived there at one point and they weren't living there at that time. I don't know if they were living there and weren't home. I don't know if they were sleeping in the other bedroom next door. Like, I have no idea, unfortunately. In just about every interview I've seen and read with Eureka, she expresses incredulity at the story of how her daughter went missing. She never publicly accuses her grandmother of anything, but it does seem that there might be more to the story between them than what has been made public. You know, the one thing that I kind of found interesting is in all of these interviews, it's almost as if like one or the other is interviewed. Like, I've never seen any interviews or read any interviews that seem to have them both together being interviewed. Mm. And I feel like typically in cases like this, you would.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, if there was even a little bit of tension between them before this, mm-hmm. like now that, you know, her kid is missing, I'm sure that the tension, whatever was there, just blew up.
Yeah.
You know, way out of control.
And that's what it sounds like. I mean, just again, from reading between the lines, I obviously do not know these people, but that's just kind of the impression that I've gotten. So, but before I get, you know, more into that, I want to jump back to that AP article that was written 5 months after Jaquila's disappearance, in which Maddie talks about the aftermath of that night. Because, like, I don't want it to seem like I'm painting Maddie in some, like, nefarious light or anything. Mm-hmm. Because in that article, she says that after Jaquila went missing, she just started to spend all of her time sitting and waiting. She even stopped taking all of her medications except for aspirin. Here's another excerpt from the article. Quote, "This is worse than my kid dying. This here is painful. Dead, I can understand. Big Mama says as tears stream down her cheeks. Disappeared, I can't handle, end quote. Now, when she says this is worse than my own kid dying, she's not speaking hypothetically. By this point, Maddie had lost three children of her own.
Jesus.
She lost her daughter, Eureka's mother, who again passed away from sickle cell disease. One of her sons was stabbed to death, apparently in a case of mistaken identity. And she lost a baby when he was just 10 months old.
Christ.
But let's get back to Eureka. Basically, the two most comprehensive articles I've seen written about Jaquila's disappearance are the 2002 article we were just talking about, and a 2011 article written by Deb Groover for the Wichita Eagle ahead of the 10-year anniversary of Jaquila's disappearance. In this article, we learn some new information. Now, when I first read about the police searching the apartment where Eureka was staying, I just assumed that that was standard protocol in a case like this. And, you know, it very well may be, but the idea that Eureka was potentially hiding her child initially came from Maddie during her 911 call.
Interesting.
Yeah. Maddie told the dispatcher that, quote, she just woke up and one of her grandchildren is missing, end quote. She also said that she had custody of Jaquila and, according to the report, was, quote, not sure if mother would have snuck in and took the child, end quote.
But I'm curious as to why she would even think that.
Yeah, I am too. And I don't know if there's like a deeper meaning behind that or if it's simply it's 4 a.m. I woke up in the middle of the night. I'm panic stricken and I'm just like
throwing ideas out
there. Yeah, like grasping at straws for like an explanation for this insane thing that seems to have happened, you know?
Yeah.
She also told the dispatcher that Eureka, quote, normally stays in the area of 13 and Grove, end quote. She also said that she had checked that area. So it seems as though she looked for Jaquila for about an hour before she called the police. And I think that's really helpful because, like I said, I mean, all of the articles say that she woke up at 3 a.m., noticed Jaquila was gone, but then it says that the
911 call was
4:06.
Right, yeah.
So, like, what happened for that next hour? And, you know, we don't have, like, a detailed accounting of that timeline.
Sure.
But, again, she did tell the dispatcher that she had already gone to that area to look. She didn't knock on the door or anything, but that at least makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I mean, at least it shows that she was actually that she went out looking for
right.
her.
The next part is from the article, and I believe it gives what could be crucial information. Now, this is coming from Eureka. She tells the reporter that the story back then was that Jaquila had been asleep in bed with Maddie and Marcus, which, you know, is what is repeated in every single article. But Eureka said that she's actually heard different versions of the night. She said that she had also heard that the kids were asleep, but that Maddie was in the bathroom when Jaquila disappeared.
So where would she have heard that version from?
One would assume her grandmother. One would assume Maddie, but she doesn't say.
I mean, that's a lot different. If she, like,
that's what I mean,
got up and went to use the restroom and then came back and the door was open.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge difference than her waking up, seeing the door open, and then realizing that Jaquila was gone. Now you're talking, I mean, one thing's terrifying enough, the first version, but the thought that somebody was possibly watching them and waiting for an opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole different situation, right? And, you know, the fact that there are different versions of the story is terrifying in and of itself.
Right. Now, obviously, time goes on. Yes, little details here and there can change with memory, but that's a huge detail to change.
Right. And I don't want people also to get the wrong impression because, you know, the way I've described Maddie so far is she's a great grandmother. Her adult daughter passed away. You know, she's got like this granddaughter, her kids, you know, et cetera, et cetera. She's on medication for arthritis. She's going to bed and watching Cops. Maddie was like 56.
Wow.
When all of this was going on.
Yeah. So not like would in theory still have her cognitive abilities.
Exactly. And, you know, again, we don't know like, sure, whatever, but yeah, we're not talking about some 90-year-old lady here.
Right.
Who, you know, maybe is a little bit more forgetful.
Right.
So the big question after this article, which again came out 10 years after Jaquila's disappearance, and this whole thing about the possible story changing, I've never read anywhere else, but it came directly from Eureka, you know? Like, it's insane to me.
Yeah.
But it seemingly indicates, like I said, that Maddie could have been changing her story. So if that's the case, why? As the hours passed after Jaquila was reported missing, the search grew. Soon, search parties made up of police officers and volunteers were out canvassing and handing out flyers. The KBI and FBI got involved in the search. Soon, just about every detective in Wichita was working on the case. They searched on foot, by air, and in nearby bodies of water, but there was no sign of the 4-year-old. Citizens called in tips and sightings, but nothing panned out. Darren Pruitt lived across the street from Maddie and her family back in 2001. He said that during the initial investigation, police blocked off their road and searched the neighbors' houses and yards. He said that they came inside his house and looked inside his cabinets and under tables.
Thinking, again, she had wandered off, maybe wandered into a neighbor's house.
Yeah, was hiding.
And was hiding somewhere.
Yeah, and, you know, I saw news footage of the searches. They were doing, like, shoulder-to-shoulder searches in fields. You know, I saw cops, like, looking in boats that were parked in front of people's houses, you know, things like that. They were really looking in every nook and cranny, thinking that she really just wandered away and was probably hiding somewhere. Police, of course, questioned the family, but we don't have too many details on that. We do know from the 2011 article that Maddie and Eureka were, of course, questioned, as well as Eureka's aunt, her aunt's husband, and the next door neighbors. Eureka was also given a polygraph, but I've never seen the results released publicly. Shortly after her daughter's disappearance, Eureka was dealt another blow when the state took Marcus away, citing concerns about the family's living situation. Eureka was shattered. She basically locked herself in her room and went into a deep depression.
You probably don't have the answer to this, but I'm curious as to what the living condition was so made it so bad. Like, too many people in the house?
I think it was probably something along those lines.
Because it's, I mean, like, they don't know the circumstances behind Jaquila going missing, so they can't, like, use that against her.
Yeah. I don't know. Eureka told the Wichita Eagle, quote, "My life ain't been the same. They take something very precious from me. And I didn't do nothing to nobody. I was 14 when I had her. I had to hurry up and grow up and learn how to take care of a baby," end quote. For the next 3 years, Eureka was only allowed to see her son once every couple of weeks. He was finally returned to her care when he was around 5 years old. At some point, the two moved down the street from Maddie's house and Eureka got a job working in a nursing home. Marcus was too young to remember the night his sister vanished, but she still stays with him. In 2019, he told Wichita's KWCH that he was keeping the faith and that he believed his sister was still alive out there somewhere. He also said he still finds traces of her around town, saying, quote, "I remember one day I was at Walmart and I saw a poster of her, like a missing children's poster of her. Man, I couldn't do nothing but cry at that point," end quote. And how confusing for this poor little boy who is only 2 years old to have everything just suddenly ripped away from him. You know, his entire family's gone because not only is his sister missing, and they were apparently very close because remember how I said, like, you know, Jaquila was kind of like an old lady.
Yeah.
She would apparently, like, you know, put him in a stroller and, like, push him around the sidewalk and stuff like that. Like, you know, they were really close. And so not only is she gone, but then he gets ripped out of his home and away from his entire family.
Yeah.
In 2018, reporter Annette Lawless interviewed Eureka for KWCH. The version that aired was about 2.5 minutes long and featured Eureka talking about how there have basically been no clues in the case. Interestingly, though, the reporter uploaded the full uncut interview to her YouTube channel, and this is the first time we get to hear some potential theories directly from the family. I know this reporter was there to interview Eureka, but I wanted to like scream when I was watching this interview, because at one point, a voice off camera interjects with some very interesting information. But Lawless, you know, is like focused on interviewing Eureka and doesn't ask any follow-up questions. Because this is off camera, she's obviously like not mic'd up, so it's really hard to hear. But I want to play this section of the interview for all of you so you can hear it and see what you think.
I just don't understand why it even happened. I mean, like I said, I'm not into drugs. I'm not a gangbanger. I'm not in the streets. I just couldn't understand why this happened like that. Like, what did I do? What did she do? I mean, is it over jealousy? Because we didn't have nothing. I mean, I was a teenager raising kids.
I just think it has something to do with that argument that all of y'all had that day. And that boy said that something about happening to your baby.
Right.
And that's how it all started. Girl sat there and lied and said that she was pregnant. And when she, I don't know what happened with her. Rico, I don't know what happened to her.
They said, I said that she wasn't pregnant. I was like, I didn't even know you was pregnant.
Yeah.
I didn't even, I'm like, what?
You know what I think, Rico? I think she told them people that she lost that baby and it had something to do with you.
So.
Because why else would he be in the yard talking about doing something to your baby? I really do it. I have always thought that.
I just.
So. What I'm talking about. So everybody want to get on camera because I go a whole other direction.
No, I understand.
Okay, so there was an argument. There was a boy in their yard saying something about something's going to happen to her baby.
Like, yeah, so...
What the hell?
Yeah, I listened to this, like, many, many times today.
Yeah.
You know, trying to basically make sure I was hearing everything. And so this is kind of the transcript that I came up with.
Okay.
So, from what I can tell, she said, quote, "I just think it had something to do with that argument that all of y'all had that day. And that boy said something about happening to your baby. And that's how it all started. Girl sat there and lied and said that she was pregnant. And she, I don't know what happened with her. I don't know what happened to where." And then Eureka, you know, kind of cuts her off. And then she says, "You know what I think, Rika? I think she told people that she lost the baby and it had something to do with you. Why else would he be in the yard talking about doing something to your baby? I really do. I have always thought that." And then after Eureka says so, it sounds like she says, "And they know who I'm talking about."
Well, we don't.
Yeah, no shit. She then tells the reporter, "That's why I didn't want to get on camera, because I'll go in a whole new nother direction."
Okay. So.
Right. Who is she talking about?
Yeah.
Like, what's the whole new direction?
Yeah. Who's this kid?
Yeah. Like, who's this guy? Who's this girl who may or may not have been pregnant?
Right.
Who may have lost a baby and blamed Eureka for it?
Right.
Like, who are these people?
Yeah. How familiar are they with the house? How close are they to this family? You know
right.
what I mean? Like, this is stuff that, you know, hopefully the cops know and would look into.
Right. Well, and that was my thought, right? And I just found it crazy that in over 20 years, this is the first and only time I saw anybody say anything about suspects.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even supposed to be public. Like, that wasn't in the news report that ended up airing. Like I said, the reporter just uploaded this like full thing. And, you know, like half the video is just them adjusting the camera and mics and things like that. You know, I mean, it was the normal stuff that you edit out. It was really just the raw footage. And then this aunt is just talking off screen. So, yeah, I think this is the aunt who Aletha, who Jaquila was with on Labor Day.
Right.
Because there is another part where she interjects and talks about how she was with Jaquila the day that, you know, the last day that she was around. And so, yeah, I mean, back to the police, like when investigators had given interviews about this case over the years, they focused on the initial search process, which makes sense.
Sure.
The 2011 article I referenced earlier had a quote from a former detective who said that they had developed some suspects, but didn't want to name any publicly. And, you know, this
makes sense too.
Yeah, it's fairly common in investigations like this. But, you know, it also was driving me crazy when I read it. And then I heard this because we don't know, like, you know, because I didn't know. I had the same question you did. Like, do police know about this fight? Like, do they know about this guy in the yard? Like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, that would be prime suspect if he had threatened.
Right. Like, had he been questioned? Had he been cleared? Like, what was going on with this?
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe they did know and ruled it out years ago. Like, who knows? But what I do know is that by February 2002, in that article, Maddie said detectives weren't calling her back. And in the 2011 article, Eureka said that she hadn't talked to detectives in years. They, of course, say that Jaquila's case is still open, but I was wondering what that actually means.
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean? Is it on somebody's desk or is it sitting on a shelf somewhere?
Exactly. So at that point, you know, I was kind of like at the end of like the research process. And so I went back and I searched because I wanted to try to find the most recent article or statement from police. You know, I just wanted to kind of see what the last thing police had said about this. And what I found was a press release that they had put out in 2022 on the 21st anniversary of Jaquila's disappearance. It read in part, quote, 6 days after she disappeared, the 9/11 attacks occurred. The Wichita Police Department has not forgotten Jaquila, and we are still seeking answers in her case, end quote.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think, I don't think they needed to add that about 9/11. Like,
yeah.
So you're immediately throwing excuses out there like, hey, 9/11 happened, so we didn't do anything. Like,
yeah, and I think everybody
knows what happened on 9/11, so I don't think you need to throw that in there. Everybody understands that, like, that was an earth-shattering event that was felt across the world, not just the United States. And yes, obviously everything came to a halt for weeks.
Yes,
especially in law enforcement community. You're like, yeah, everybody understands that. You don't need to put that out there. Like,
in a press release 21 years later.
About a missing person.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, no, I mean, I agree. And I think that that absolutely explains a good deal of the lack of media attention, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
And again, the initial search, it seems like it was pretty thorough. It seems like they did a good job. But I'm not saying, yeah, exactly. Right. And I'm not saying that they dropped the ball or whatever after that. I'm just saying we don't know. You know, we don't know what was done.
Yeah.
That press release basically also gave information to their further cold case unit, right? So I went to Wichita's cold case page on their website just to kind of poke around and check it out. And this is what it says. Quote, the Wichita Police Department is committed to the continued investigation of unsolved homicides and missing person cases. The cold case unit is compiled of over 200 open and unsolved homicides since the mid-1970s. These cases will not be forgotten, and the ultimate goal is to successfully close these cases with new information, updated testing, or witness cooperation that could lead to prosecution, end quote.
Okay, there's 200 open homicide investigations. What about missing persons?
Right. I found the omission of missing person cases from the second part of that to be interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's also interesting is, okay, so like you go to the page, that's the top paragraph, right? Then below that, they have a list of unsolved cases, right? Of the people, the victims. And they're clickable links. So you click on one, it kind of opens up and gives you like the basic, like the date and, you know, basic facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not all 200, but there's probably like 50, let's say. So I scroll down. They're all homicides. Did not see a single missing person. Did not see Jaquila's name. In 2011, Jaquila's case was the only open missing persons case in Wichita. So I don't know if that's still the case or not.
Well, I mean, if it is, you would assume that they would put that up on the website then.
Right. And so
unless they're trying to say that this is not considered a cold case and it's still quote unquote active.
Well, no, but in that press release, it specifically said that the cold case unit was who was handling it. But then I was like, okay, well, maybe, because I kind of had that same thought too. And so there's another section on the website that's like specifically for missing and exploited people. And so I clicked on that. They didn't have like cases, you know, named, which you can, whatever. Sure. But, you know, I searched for Jaquila's name on the general website, didn't find anything. So I started to get a little disheartened because, you know, they put out this press release saying that her case was open, that they weren't forgetting it. And yet I found zero trace of her on their website. Right.
Right.
So I decided to email them because they had their email right there. And I wanted to basically just email them to see if her case was still considered open and active. But I figured since I was emailing them anyway, I sent them the section of the interview with Eureka that we listened to earlier. And I did that because I was like, what if they hadn't heard that, right?
Yeah, what
that,
if they don't know?
Yeah, what if they didn't know about this fight? Like, what if, you know, I think they probably do, but like on the off chance... Couldn't hurt to send it, right? So I emailed them, like I said, to ask if the case was still open and say, hey, also, have you heard about this? You know, did you hear this interview? And I was pleasantly surprised when they responded to my email within about an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Detective Addie Perkins responded to my email and said, quote, thank you for reaching out and providing the information. Yes, we have been in contact with both Eureka and her sister, the aunt. Oh, so it's Eureka's sister?
Oh, would be Tequila's aunt then.
Yeah. See, I thought it was Eureka's aunt this whole time, and maybe it was Tequila's aunt, Eureka's sister. In any case, she went on to say, all of the information and leads we have been given were investigated, but unfortunately, the case remains open, end quote. Now, this, of course, is not like earth-shattering information other than the fact that even though I've read this five times, I just realized that she said her sister.
Eureka's sister.
Yeah. But, you know, I was obviously glad to hear back from someone who seemed familiar with the case, who didn't need to, like, research who the hell I was talking about, seemingly, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was a quick response
too. exactly. Yeah. And you know, she did assure me that the case was still open. Now, I did decide to press my luck a little bit since I got such a quick and pleasant response, and I said, listen, because I entered in my initial email, I said who I was and like why I was emailing. And so I was like, listen, you know, I understand why police officers like don't release a lot of information. However, like this case is 20 years old. It has mostly disappeared from
the public eye.
The public eye. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like a lot of people do not know about this case. And I was like, is there any information, any new information that you could give that, you know, might help jog people's memories or like help
reinvigorate the case.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Or like just, you know, renew interest in the case.
Yeah.
And I did ask two specific questions. I said, you know, I am curious if there was anybody else home the night that Jaquila disappeared. And I asked if anybody has officially been ruled out as a suspect. And I brought up the polygraph that Eureka took and how we didn't, you know the results. And the closest thing I'd ever read to the family being ruled out is that Maddie in some articles said that like the family had pretty much been ruled out.
Okay.
But you know, that's coming from the family. You know, who knows? So I just wanted to see if they could confirm if that was in fact the case. And again, I was like, listen, I understand if you can't answer these questions, but if there's anything that you can give us, I think it would be helpful. She hasn't gotten back to me
yet. Here we go.
But literally wrote her the same day we're recording this. So if she does get back to me and if there is any new information, I, of course, you know, we'll do like a little update and we'll talk about that at another time.
I would be curious if, I know Tequila's dad wasn't in the picture, but I would be curious if the police ever talked to him.
Yeah, I truly don't know. I don't know if he lived in the area. I mean, I know nothing about him.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a prime suspect for me.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I think you always have to, it's just like, you know, if the wife dies, you have to look at the husband first. Like, yeah. It's the same exact thing. So, yeah, but I just don't know what the situation is there. I know, again, this isn't as much information as we usually have, but based on what we do know, like, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, now that hearing what the sister/aunt said in that interview, I have to go with that as the leading theory, is that whatever that argument was in the yard,
mm-hmm.
that boy, quote unquote, threatened to do something to Eureka's child, Chiquila. Seems to me that if that person was familiar enough with the house, that he was the one that came in and took Chiquila.
But to what end, you know?
I don't know.
Yeah, and that's what I don't understand. And there have been other rumors, right? Of course, 20 years, sure. There are going to be a ton of rumors. One is that another family member took Chiquila to give her a better life. One rumor is that Chiquila was being molested and somebody took her to shut her up. And
based on what evidence? They're just throwing out ideas.
Exactly, right? Like anything, yeah. You know? The one thing that does seem clear to me, or likely, I should say, is that to some extent, it does seem like an inside job. And now I'm not saying an inside job, meaning like somebody in the family necessarily.
Yeah,
right. But I think you're right. I mean, I don't think this is like a random stranger who just happened upon the house.
No, we've already talked about it. But yeah, if it's a random person, they're not going to know where that back door leads. They're not going to know that the back door lock was broken. They're not even going to know who's sleeping in that room.
Right.
So unless it's got to be somebody that with knowledge of the house, knowledge of the family, possibly even knowledge that Eureka wasn't going to be home.
Mm-hmm. But to me, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a member of the family
or even a friend.
Because, I mean, look at Elizabeth Smart, right? So Elizabeth Smart was taken by somebody who did have familiarity with the home.
Right.
But not a family member, not a friend.
Right.
He was a worker.
Yeah.
Who, you know, had been around, who had seen Elizabeth.
Right.
And who knew that the kitchen window was left unlocked.
Right. So this could be a friend. This could be somebody or an acquaintance that of Eureka's that happened to be in the house at some point. I mean, we don't know. But I think it's unrealistic to say that she wandered off, given the extent of the search, the initial search.
Right. And to me, the two things that I kind of rule out are, one, a random child abductor happening across the house, right? It's
completely unrealistic.
And two, her wandering off and getting lost.
Right.
Because she was four. When you're four, you can't get that far on foot.
Right.
And they had so many people searching for a long time. And and we're not talking like, you know, the wilderness here, right?
Yeah.
You look at Kyron Horman or somebody who goes missing next to like insanely dense woods.
Right.
Right. Where you could miss a child. Like,
yeah,
we're talking Wichita here.
Yeah.
That's not the situation.
Yeah.
That we're in. So I do not believe that that's a real possibility.
I would be curious to know, or I would like to know, if they used canines to search for her scent and if the canines tracked anywhere and then lost the scent.
Indicating a car?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think so. So let me put that back. So I'm not positive if canines are used. I think they were.
Right. We don't know.
But when canines are used and something like that happens, I mean, that's generally something that is made public. And because...
Well, it's a direct indicator, then it is an abduction.
Right, 100%. Right. And that's something important that police would want to put out right away as it happens. So I again, would severely doubt that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
And maybe they just didn't use canines at all.
In her 2011 interview, Eureka said that she was afraid that if her daughter was still out there, that she wouldn't recognize her as her mother. She's worried about Jaquila forgetting her, but she's more worried about the world forgetting Jaquila. We don't want that to happen. This little girl matters. She's loved, and she deserves to be found. Jaquila Scales has been missing from Wichita, Kansas since September 5th, 2001. She's a black female with brown hair and brown eyes. She has a brown birthmark on the left side of her face and a scar on her upper right leg. Her top teeth are decayed. Jaquila was approximately 3 feet tall and 40 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She was 4 years old when she went missing. She would be 27 today. If you have information regarding the disappearance of Jaquila Scales, please contact the WPD investigators at 316-268-4379 or email the Cold Case Unit at coldcase@wichita.gov. If you wish to remain anonymous, you can send a tip to Crime Stoppers by calling 316-267-2111 or downloading the free P3 mobile app. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!